Hi, welcome to the Medicine of Being Human podcast. This is Sina Maria, and I am so excited to be back after almost 3 weeks of traveling. I returned 2 days ago into California where I live, and it was an incredible journey, and I wanted to create an episode to share about some of the highlights, some of the learnings, some of the deep processes and awakenings that I had. It was a very transformative time to be traveling. And I'll go into a bit of the cosmic astrological updates that have happened in the past few weeks as well. So to start with that, my biggest thing that I want to share and that I've been working with personally is the fact that Uranus moved into Taurus. That was right around the Pisces new moon, which was last week. And also on the same day, Mercury went retrograde. So that is the first planet to go retrograde this year in 2019. Up until the 6th of March, it was all planets moving forward. So Mercury is now retrograde. It's about the middle point of the retrograde cycle right now, and it's retrograde in Pisces. So Pisces is super strong right now, Pisces energy. Pisces is the limitless ocean, water medicine, really practicing, connecting more deeply with water, listening with water, charging your water, putting your intentions into your water, giving gratitude to the water, and tuning into the water that is flowing beneath our feet in the earth. There's crystalline rivers that I've been working with, and really this is a time to connect with water in whatever way resonates with you. That is very much Piscean medicine. So Uranus has 7-year cycles, and it has been in Aries up until this point. Uranus, which is the planet of awakening, it's the furthest planet out in our... Uranus has been in Aries for the past 7 years. Uranus has 7-year cycles, and Uranus is a planet, it's the third farthest planet from Earth. So Neptune and Pluto are beyond Uranus. And what that signifies is that Uranus is very much out of bounds energy. It's far out there. Uranus is the ruler of Aquarius. And so if you're familiar with Aquarian energy, you can definitely tune into that with the Uranus energy. It's very revolutionary. It's brand new insights out of nowhere. It's like pulling this amazing genius idea out of thin air. It's very cosmic compared to the Taurus energy, which Uranus just moved into. So think about where you were in 2011. That was the start of the Uranus and Aries cycle that we just completed. And now we will be in Uranus and Taurus until 2026. So that's a fun thing to reflect on. I looked back at my 2011 year, and it was right after I graduated college and settled into San Francisco and started working at a startup. And that's a very different place from where I am now. And I do feel the closing of that cycle in many different layers right now in my life. So Uranus and Taurus. Taurus is ruled by Venus, and it's very earth energy. You can think of Uranus as the cosmic divine father and Taurus as the divine earth mother energy. And Taurus is super grounded. If you know any Tauruses in your life, they're all about food and sex and sleep and comforts. Very skilled at the physical realm. And Uranus, like I said, is way out there. So I personally, being an Aquarius sun and having a lot of air and water in my chart, have loved this energy because it's really helping me ground my vision, my sight, my cosmic sight and vision into earth and be able to manifest in this physical realm. So you may be noticing this may be uncomfortable for people, or you may just be seeing that or be feeling that you're creating more with more ease in the physical world around you, and that is maybe different than how you felt in the past. That being said, there's, you know, especially now in this time of quickening and we're ascending at faster rates every day, there are so many planetary aspects and shifts happening that, you know, this is just one piece that I'm pulling out that I'm personally feeling really strongly in my life. But I also mentioned the recent Pisces new moon, Mercury's retrograde, Black Moon Lilith is stationing retrograde today. I mean, there's endless things I could share about from that perspective. But this also really applies to my personal experience, which is why I wanted to share this. Because on my trip, it was such an experience of grounded, embodied energy, really working with the earth in new, deeper ways than I have before. So before I dive into my trip recap and my main takeaways that I've learned in the past 3 weeks, I wanted to share about something that I'm really excited about, and it's, of course, perfect timing. Ceres, who you're probably familiar with from previous episodes, the series that we recently did. Ceres Andromeda is my ascension guide that I've been working with for the past 3 years. And she has created the next series of webinars called the New Earth Purpose Webinar Series. It's a 3-part series, and we're going to be doing them together. So it'll be an interview format similar to how you've heard us work together on the podcast. It will be very affordable, so $13 for one webinar, or if you'd like to sign up for all three, you can sign up for $30, which is a really great deal. And we'll be having them live, if you want to join live, on March 20th, March 27th, and April 3rd. So starting right on the equinox, which I didn't even just mention, but that is very big, and I'm sure that will come up in our webinar series as well. So if you join live, you can ask questions at the end, and if you're not able to join live, you can also purchase the recordings. So if you want to sign up for that, go to medicineofbeinghuman.com/offerings, and you can go ahead and purchase the webinar series there. And this is going to be very illuminating information around what our earth, like how to connect with our earth purpose, how to embody this in the creation of the new earth. So there's different topics being covered, like realizing our starseed mission, how to create in a true way aligned with our divine purpose, activating Christ and Sophia Christ unity codes for new creation, DNA reactivation coordinating with increasing earth light, so how we ascend with the earth and how we can co-create with the earth. We'll be talking about new level manifesting, so what new earth needs come from our heart's desires, shifting from linear mental goals to true creation from the heart, and the role of ascension and embodiment and how we can bring forth what we truly are with ease and grace. The last webinar is Becoming New Earth, so waking up to and reactivating the crystalline network that exists in Earth. We talk about water in its natural state, we're covering what that is, and how to activate water consciousness, including Lemurian water healing codes. So I'm super excited about this. I think what's really happening with Uranus and Taurus, and why I'm feeling that so strongly, is my mission on Earth, I'm quite clear, is to be a bridge. And what is happening with Uranus and Taurus coming together is we're bridging heaven and earth. Like, this energy is really helping us integrate and interweave these energies that may feel really different at times. So in my personal work, for example, like I was just on a 3-week trip to visit cacao farms and learn about permaculture principles and, you know, open the fruits and taste all the seeds and the pulp and the sweetness that grows from the earth. And I spent a lot of time in water, swimming and immersed in the elements. And I was realizing that that feels quite different from my, or it has felt quite different in the past from my work with ascension and with crystalline consciousness activating with our crystalline waters, activating crystalline earth grids, activating with actual crystals, and really all that I talk about often on this podcast is a lot about our ascension journey and why we're here incarnating in this human form right now at this time on earth. And those things felt quite different to me. And I'm now starting to really feel them merging within my being and understand that my work with cacao and the plants and just earth connection in general is how I can play my part in manifesting the new earth that I'm here to create. And by building these hands-on skills and connections and understanding of how earth works, how to grow trees and plants in a good way, how to keep bees with respect. I'll go into these in a little more detail later. But all of these skills and tools and understandings of how to be in relationship with the earth and create with the earth are how I can create the new earth in reality, like in tangible form. And so this is really a piece that I'm so excited about. I feel less split in my life and passions. And this webinar series with Ceres is going to really activate that and help us integrate that, because we're all doing this in our own ways and in our own missions here on earth. And so this series, if you're feeling a bit of duality still of, you know, I like this, but I don't know how that applies to this other thing that I like, you know, it's all us. It's all our truth, our true purpose emerging through us, and it doesn't have to make sense. And this webinar series is really going to help us surrender to that and accept that and understand that from a cellular level. If you want to sign up, again, that's medicineofbeinghuman.com/offerings. You can also find the link in our show notes. Okay, so on to my trip recap. I took notes. I'm going to try to do this in a summary version. It's really fresh in my mind, and I really wanted to record this as soon as possible to capture the nuances and the little stories that, you know, often have deep, deep meaning. So overall, the purpose of this trip, I went with Firefly Chocolate. It's at Cacao Ceremony on Instagram or ceremonial-cacao.com. This is a company that I work for, and I'm a deep steward and ambassador and just deep lover of this work. And so we went down to Belize in Guatemala to visit the cacao farms that we source our cacao from. We started the trip with a 6-day little vacation because we need some rest and relaxation. We needed to take a little pause. And we ended up at this incredible place called Glover's Reef Atoll, which is a 3-hour boat ride from the southern coast of Belize. And so it's really out there, and it's a very small island. It took maybe 5 minutes to walk around the whole thing. And it's a fascinating place. It was purchased by a couple in the 60s, and they have raised 2 generations there. So they had children, and then now they have grandchildren. And so their children have been raised on this island out on the coast in Belize. And they've kept it as this kind of rootsy retreat space. So it's not, there's very few amenities. It's not by any means any sort of resort. It's kind of like glamping. We were trying to categorize it, and it's actually quite hard to categorize. But basically, there's no electricity. There's no Wi-Fi, no data. You're out in the middle of the ocean, really in touch with the elements. So I stayed in a little thatch hut right on the ocean, on the beach, and they have space to camp there. They have compost toilets. They have some outdoor showers. They do have a restaurant that does have electricity. They have a generator on the island for their business side of things. But as far as all the huts and all the places that people stay when they visit, there's no electricity or no internet. So it was an incredible experience. Really, I felt my consciousness kind of unscramble and unravel as I spent a good chunk of time without any electrical waves or Wi-Fi waves, you know, going through my being. And I really synced with the cycles of the earth. So without electricity, when the sun goes down, it was, you know, dinner time and then maybe some stargazing and then bedtime. And also, this island is right in the trade wind path. And so the wind was blowing nonstop right through my hut. So I was, you know, surrounded by gorgeous, gorgeous water. I've never seen water this color, different colors, turquoise and aquamarine and dark blue, and so much wildlife. There was really beautiful birds that I spent time watching, ospreys and frigate birds, and I saw some herons, and there's hermit crabs and coconut trees. The main thing, there's a few other trees. There's a palmetto, and I'm forgetting the name of another one, but the primary plants on the island were coconut trees. And so Jonas, who I was there with, and he's the founder of Firefly Chocolate, he would climb up on this kind of rickety ladder that they had tied two ladders together with rope and to make it tall enough. And so he would climb up and harvest some coconuts, and we would crack them open with a machete and drink the water. And we made some coconut meat with a little grinder that they had. And it was simple. There was really nowhere to go, nothing to do. The snorkeling was incredible. The water was beautiful. And yeah, it was a time to really reset. So I spent my days every morning with yoga and a lot of cacao, a lot of visioning, a lot of creative, spontaneous conversation. My dream space became so alive. I wrote down my dreams every morning and had really vivid dreams. And it was fascinating to see the themes of my dreams and, you know, who was in my dreams when I was totally disconnected from any sort of electricity or internet. And it really felt, especially for the first few days, it felt like my consciousness was unraveling. It was like all this static, all this kind of frenetic energy and thought patterns started to just, I'm envisioning Harry Potter, like it was like pulled out of my brain and my being. These like tendrils of tense thought patterns were being released. And it's an incredible experience. I really tuned into the importance of creating that space in my life. You know, I want to do that more often, and I will now that I've had this experience of really disconnecting, you know, not just a social media detox, which is great, but, you know, going out as far as you can, getting away from electromagnetic fields and reconnecting with yourself, finding that calm, centered space within that is so magical and so powerful. We also had really sweet stargazing, being out there and learning the constellations, and it made me so much more in tune. I always look at the stars when I go outside at night anyway, but just setting the stage with really communing with the stars in the beginning of the trip, and then everywhere I moved as we traveled through Belize and then through a few different cities in Guatemala, I would see the constellations that I recognized in the sky, and I would, they might be in a little slightly different orientation, but overall it was this anchor point, which kind of surprised me because I think of the earth as like the anchor and the stars as more expansive, but this experience, I guess, in perfect Uranus and Taurus energy just showed me that I can find that anchor point and find that sense of home and familiarity just by looking up at the sky at night. So that was really powerful. And, you know, one thing I want to share is I had this really deep realization that I am called to do a permaculture design course and to really understand how to work with the earth in a good way and how to build systems. You know, even though I'm not planning on building a massive permaculture farm yet, at least as far as I know, I do really see the value in, from what I, the little that I do know about permaculture, I see the value in how the design thinking, like how you, the framework that permaculture provides as far as creating sustainable systems will impact the rest of my life and will impact how I view things from a more holistic perspective. And I just can feel deep in my bones the importance of doing this work right now. And so on this island, you know, it's such a beautiful, it is a protected island and region because the coral reef is very, very alive. And we could just walk out, you know, 5 minutes, start snorkeling and be in ridiculous coral reef, like purple fans and brain coral and schools of fish. And it was phenomenal. And I know that this island is doing, the people, the stewards of this island are doing a lot in trying to keep it very natural. You know, like I said, they don't have electricity. They are trying to minimize their footprint from what I can tell. And there was some practices that really kind of hurt my heart and boggled my mind that my sense was they were kind of doing things as they've always done them by putting bleach in they would catch rainwater and that was what was used for the outdoor showers and the outdoor sinks. And they would put bleach in that, obviously to sanitize it. But it was just kind of insane to me because that water is going to go back into the ocean and the coral reef is right there. So that, I didn't quite understand that at all. They burn their trash, which is a quite common practice in countries that don't have trash service. And, you know, if you're on an island, like, it's a lot of work and trash is a very challenging problem in general. But, you know, they burn their trash and that has an impact on the environment. They have a generator, like I said, and that island is made for solar. You know, it's like silly that they are using a power source that is wasteful when they could quite inexpensively get solar panels up. And their compost toilet situation was just not right. And so, yeah, as I lived on this island and saw both the beauty and these areas of improvement and opportunity to, you know, do even better, I realized that I have so much privilege and so much access to these, you know, all this knowledge about permaculture, for example. You know, my sense was these people, like, they've lived out in the middle of the ocean for decades and they may just not know. And and that's okay. You know, I don't want to speak poorly about their stewardship at all, because I really do feel the care and love that they put into this. And it really sunk into my heart and my gut, like my knowing of, okay, I can see clearly that there are things here that could quite easily be fixed and be made more sustainable, like more in sustainable relationship with the earth. So I'm going to take responsibility for that and learn how to actually do these things, because I know they're not quite right, but I actually don't know what the alternative solutions would be. So that experience, and then throughout the trip visiting these cacao farms that are built and farmed with agroforestry principles and a lot of permaculture principles, really just inspired me to learn how to create in good relationship, in right relationship with the earth. Another quite personal thing that I want to share is on the last day, or last full day on the island, I got quite sort of sick. My stomach started acting up, and I was gurgly and going to the bathroom a lot, and realized quite quickly that, okay, I'm going to be going into ceremony today. I'm going to be clearing something, and I'm going to be fasting because that's what felt right for my body. And I'm just going to hang in the hammock and, you know, take clearly that I had the space to do that. So it felt very right. And I didn't feel much resistance, thankfully. And so from that space, I was writing in my journal, and I got into this really deep inquiry around my partnership and the community that I live in and the family that I have, and you know, like my soul family, my bio family, all the family that I have around the world. And I got really clear, and it was quite unexpected, but I felt my soul ready to be a mother. And I just had my 31st birthday in the middle of February, so I knew, I just could feel that something big was shifting in my life, and I really wasn't expecting this at all. I've known, you know, that probably wanted kids, and definitely didn't feel any sort of deep pressure or calling from my being around it. And I just, I don't know, it just kind of emerged as I was creating space for it. And it's been a pretty exciting and powerful thing to process. You know, I feel like our generation, a lot of, you know, women are having kids so much later than our parents did. And there's not that many women around me personally that have kids or are even moving in that direction right now. So it was kind of mind-blowing and felt really true. And I just reflected on how I realized that everything that I've created in my life is, I'm perfectly set this up to bring a child into this world in a way that I want to, in a way that feels right and good, and knowing that this child would be surrounded by a lot of love and living in a way that I feel is very important to live in, and really seeing again how this is so much how we create the new earth. You know, it's like we have to, like, I know it, a lot of people are scared to bring children into the earth right now because it is seems to be so perilous. And I just felt deep in my soul that we need to, for those that are called, obviously everyone's on their own path, but for those that are called, bringing in a new generation in a good way, setting them up from the very beginning with, you know, being intentional from everything around the house and environment that you're bringing the child into, to the way that you conceive and the intentions that you set before that process even begins. And then, of course, how the pregnancy goes. I mean, just there's so many pieces that if done consciously, you know, just set such a solid framework. And even if you're not consciously conceiving in that way and you get pregnant, just having this awareness of bringing a new being into this realm so that they can help and support, and basically you can be a vessel to bring in the next generation of light on this planet. I mean, wow, how incredible is that? Whew. Okay, so that was my big recap from the first part of the trip, which was on that island. It was a lot of personal process, as you can see. And next we went to a family farm in the southern part of Belize. So our kind of the biggest city near us was Punta Gorda. And we then traveled about 40 minutes from there to go to Martin Chiquin's family farm. He's a Kekchi Maya man, and his family tend this farm, and they have a store also where they sell their produce and other things to the community. And he's such a sweet, sweet soul, and basically is creating a beautiful tourism opportunity, so inviting people to come camp on his farm. That is a 30-minute hike through really beautiful, very like untouched jungle, and then you kind of emerge into this little oasis where there's a thatch roof hut type of building, open air, there's no walls. That's where all the cooking was done on wood fires, by his daughter and daughter-in-law, Yolanda and Katarina. And they had, Katarina had her child Jason there, who was 7, and then Charmin, who was 3, and they were so freaking adorable. And, it was a really small family. He has 2 children, and there was a few people that worked on the farm, but overall it was probably like 8 people, I would say. And so we camped there, and he has 1,500 cacao trees. And so you walked over this little river, and then you were in this gorgeous cacao forest, and there was so many other plants that he grew. There was achiote, there was coffee, there was plantains, there was bananas, there's some sort of... I can't remember the name, but like a chestnut. There was allspice and ginger. I mean, I could go on and on and on. So it was magical. Another experience where I was disconnected from the internet and didn't have cell service and just out deep in nature, and getting to sleep there was really special. I actually got sick that morning again. So when I had that process on the island, I kind of had my day and felt better by dinner and ate some dinner. The next day I was fine as we traveled. And then the following morning, the day we were going out to the farm, I woke up with the stomach gurgles. And for those that maybe haven't traveled in Central or South America, there's just different flora down there. There's different gut bacteria. It's a different world. And my sense is that for people that are new to traveling down there, it can be a lot on the system. And it's quite common to get, you know, a parasite or an amoeba or some sort of stomach stuff, depending on how you travel, depending on how you eat, depending on your own body, you know. But the year before when I was in Guatemala, I definitely got quite sick at times. And it's just part of the journey, you know. It's like part of the magic of experiencing new cultures and part of the amazing privilege that we have as being able to travel. And also, you know, our bodies are digesting a lot. There's not just food, but seeing, you know, the disparity in income and the disparity in livelihood that that I experienced, for example, seeing these indigenous Maya people and how they live in such fullness with such beauty and often a lot of abundance and, you know, no running water, or no electricity. And that's a lot, for especially for sensitive beings. Like, that's a lot to take in and assimilate within our body systems. So of course there's a lot more to getting sick than just the physical. But that morning, I ended up throwing up on the hike out to this farm, and it was not ideal by any means. I like threw up on the side of the trail in front of everyone, and then spent most of the day like crying and laying in the hammock. And even that was great, you know, like I couldn't go on the first tour that Martine gave, but I hung out with the women, Yolanda and Katarina, and their son Jason, Katarina's son Jason. And I ended up singing a song with him. And the really cool thing about Belize is that it's, so their primary, there's fascinating history. Their primary language, the national language, is English. And everyone that I encountered there seems to speak at least two, if not three, languages. So everyone speaks English. That's what they're taught in schools. And then with Martine's family, for example, they speak Kekchi Maya, which is a language, their own language. And then there's some Spanish. There's actually more Spanish in the northern part of Belize. So there is some Spanish down there, but it's not by any means their primary language. And it's not, I didn't hear it spoken very often. So, and then within English, it's a Creole variation. So we were on the Caribbean coast, and very much Creole influence. And also there's a whole nother group of people called the Garifuna, and they speak a totally different language. So it's fascinating. It's a very, very cool country. And there's a lot I could say about the fact that they were a British colony until 1981. And, you know, what happened with colonization and what is happening with colonization there. But I'll leave it at the great thing that for us as non-Kekchi Maya speakers was that we could communicate. I could communicate with 7-year-old Jason, and we could communicate with Martine and his family. And that was really special, because language barriers can be a big barrier. And we experienced that a little bit more in the following part of the trip, which I'll share more about. But anyways, it was just really sweet, especially as I was feeling sick, to be able to communicate. You know, Yolanda, one of the daughters, came over to me when I was feeling sorry for myself in a hammock, and she shared about her own stomach issues that she's had. And you know, I asked if she'd ever gone to a doctor, and she said no. She tried a bush doctor, which is like, you know, kind of a natural doctor that lives out in the communities, like a healer more so than a Western doctor. And so she tried that, and that didn't work. And it was really fascinating. She didn't have any plans. You know, it was just kind of something that she accepted as part of her life. And that also gave me an interesting perspective of like, wow, I feel sick right now, and I'm so blessed and have so much access, and I really need to be grateful for that and not feel too sorry for myself. I think the highlight of that part, besides just being immersed in the jungle and camping next to cacao forests, was the cave visit that we did. So there's caves on this land, on Martine's property, and he took us through them on the last day. And there's three incredible caves. Like, these are caves that, you know, if he wanted to open them up to the public, people would pay to visit. Huge caverns, there's huge bats in them, just really, really incredible. And so we went through a couple of the caves and ended in the Jaguar Cave, which was named that because jaguars live in the back, like way deep in the cave. And also a jaguar that was in town got injured and crawled into that cave to die. And so people at one point were going in there to collect jaguar teeth, which is fascinating. And when we walked up to this cave, there was a white barn owl that flew out, and we saw it sitting in the tree, and it lived at the entrance to this cave. There was, we could see its droppings, and there was white owl feathers dropped all over the entrance of the cave, and we actually did cacao ceremony in the cave, and there was a point where the owl must have flown back in for a moment, which we didn't realize it had come back, but then we realized that it was there because it flew out again. And so it was really with us and really present, which was so special. I don't think I've ever been that close consistently to an owl like that before. And so we went into this cave, and this cave is where Martine did a ceremony, a really important ceremony, when he decided to go through with his vision of creating this cacao farm and farming all the food that his family would eat and sharing that with their community. A lot of people in the community told him that it was a bad idea, that he wasn't going to be able to successfully farm cacao because there's too many squirrels and too many other animals that would eat the cacao. And he felt really clear in his vision. He used to work in banana fields. That's actually how he learned Spanish, is he was working with different migrant workers. Bananas are grown in these places. If you didn't know, that's where the majority of the bananas come from in the world. And so he had a lot of different lifetimes where he would work from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. and commute at least an hour each way. So, operating on 4 hours of sleep is the norm for him. And it's really beautiful to hear about how he used to work and live, and then see what he created for himself and for his family, and see the thriving trees and all the animals that are living in harmony in this place. And so he prayed. He went to this jaguar cave and created this really cool altar out of rocks and stones, and made offerings with cacao and corn, and prayed that he would be in good relationship with the land, prayed that he would be protected and his family would be protected and abundant, prayed for clarity on how to work with the squirrels and how to farm in a way that would be successful. And he received the guidance to plant plantain and banana trees and other fruit trees amidst the cacao, so that's basically the offering to the animals, and that they would leave the cacao alone. And it's been quite successful. So really, really beautiful, a really amazing thing to be in this cave where he has this relationship. Oh, and another thing is that these caves are used for ceremony, for local ceremony for the Kekji Maya people. So he was describing a ceremony where there is over 100 people in this cave, and the offerings that they made, and they were, copal resin is grown in the copal trees on land in that area. And so there's just so much that's really beautiful and powerful that we experienced. And so the energy in these caves was really strong, and we ended up doing cacao ceremony with Martin in this cave on his altar, and it was really sweet. We shared some firefly cacao with him that is from Belize. It's from the one, he's one of the farmers that we source from. And so that was really powerful to have this kind of complete circle of supply chain and really connect and share the product that we make with the people that farm it. And one thing that was really sweet in that ceremony was that he translated what we were saying into Kekji Maya so that the cave gods could understand, which I thought was really cool to really see how they interact and relate with the gods and their spirit, their spiritual practices and connections. Okay, now on to Guatemala. So then we took a boat from Punta Gorda over to Barrios, which is one of the ports in Guatemala. And then we had a team from Cacao Verapaz, who is our partner down in Guatemala, One of the teammates picked us up and drove us the 5 or 6 hours to Koban, which was kind of our home base for the next probably 4 or 5 days. And, oh, there's so much I could say about this trip, but the one thing that I wanted to share specifically about our Guatemala time was our visit to the town of Chivite, or the cacao, the Association of Cacao Growers is called Ademayac, and we visited them. This is where the glowing Guatemala cacao from Firefly comes from, and oh my gosh, wow. Okay, so this is a community of 130 families that live on the other side of this, of the Cajabon River, so this big, beautiful river. These families live on the other side of the river from the main road, and so that's the only access that they have to the rest of the world. They either have to take a boat across the river or walk across a rope bridge to get to the other side. And so they live basically in like a jungly farm forest. There's no roads or cars over there. There's no electricity over there. There is some running water, but it's not prevalent. You know, so fascinating. And so they carry everything that they need across this bridge back and forth. But for example, the sacks of cacao beans are 130 pounds, and they carry them about 45 minutes they strap it around their head and carry it on their back, and they carry it across the bridge and up a pretty perilous hike to get to the main road and then bring it to the fermentation center. So, I mean, the strength and the work ethic and also just the grit of these people just by the nature of where they live and how they live. You know, it's not to say that, like, they also don't have much of a choice. I want to acknowledge that. They live off of, you know, if one family, the head farmer will make maybe $3,000 a year, and that is what they live off of. So it, by many measures, it would probably be described as poverty, and in a lot of ways it is. And they live in such a vibrant connection with the earth, and they eat from their land, and you know, everything they eat is grown from the land except for like the rice and the beans that they get from the store and a few other things, but all the spices, obviously all the cacao, all the, like, there's different fruits. I mean, it's incredible. So to be able to access these families was so special. So this is another Kekchi Maya community, and we were with our incredible guide Roy, who speaks Spanish, English, and Kekchi Maya. So he was a translator, and this is where my Spanish came in handy a lot, because there's a council leadership structure within this association. So there's 130 families, there's 25 different organic farmers, certified organic farmers, and then there's a council of about, I'd say, 10 farmers within the whole association that make up the leadership council. So it's a very flat structure, and they all work together. And one of the main men within that structure, Gerardo, spoke really good Spanish. So I got to speak with him a lot, which was really cool. But wow, I can't even describe. There will be pictures coming, and I will probably create some sort of website with them, or a website page with them on it, because it was beyond. It was like walking into cacao Narnia. Walking across this river, there's all these old cacao trees, like probably 30 years old, and they're on hills. So there's just these rolling hills of cacao trees, and there's all these other trees intermixed, and so saturated with life and love. And I'm still integrating the experience. It was so beautiful. And we spent a lot of time with these farmers and their families, and we talked about everything from their you know, how much money they need, how much money they're trying to collect to purchase new land so that their sons can start farming. We talked about farming methods and what they've learned about farming cacao successfully. We talked about, they had a lot of questions for us about money and how much money it costs to travel down to Guatemala, and how much money, you know, it costs to run the business to run the Firefly business. And, it was really fascinating. You know, they shared that there are some rumors that people in America have machines that print money, and that's how we have so much money. And it gave me so much perspective. We spent a good part of the day in Mateo, one of the farmers' homes, and it's built out of wood. There's two quite large rooms in the home and dirt floors, and they sleep in hammocks. So this is very, very rural living. Like I said, no electricity. They did have a water spigot in the back. And then cacao trees are everywhere. There is a cacao tree right next to the bathroom, so you can like look at the pods as you're going to the bathroom. And the bathroom is basically like a kind of like a compost toilet. You know, there's no running water. So, you know, really an incredible experience, a really eye-opening experience for me to see how these people live and to see how physically challenging life really is and how strong they are. I mean, it was hard for me to walk down the path to the bridge without carrying anything. You know, it was like, it's not a paved path. It's not a made path. It's just made by people's feet walking up and down it. And their kids are like running up and down it. You know, they're so versed and connected to the land and their home, and they carry these huge pounds of cacao. These huge sacks of cacao over these quite perilous pathways, and they're quite also a small people. Like with the women, I was a head taller than all of them, and I'd never had that experience before because I'm 5'3", and if you've ever seen me in real life, you know I'm quite a petite person. So, oh my gosh, it's just there's so much learning and so much eye-opening around the privilege and the access that I have, and also really, really powerful connections around ceremony and their connection with cacao and how they work with cacao and the different rituals that they have. And, you know, when we sat down for lunch, Mateo, the head of the house, did a copal blessing and lit incense with copal, with locally harvested copal, and you know, went around the whole table, and so we got wafted in the copal smoke. And then he lit a candle and did some prayers to the altar that they have in the house. And it was really beautiful to connect to their traditions and their ways of working with cacao. And when we were asking questions about it, they shared after that they'd never been asked those questions before. They've had visits by other chocolate makers, and they've never had the conversations that they had with us. And they seemed to be really touched that we were curious about how they connected with cacao. And later in the day, we went into the women's side. I'm calling it the women's side. There was a very big divide between the men and the women. I realized during lunch that we were in the room, and in the main room, the eating room, and Elsa, my friend and photographer that was with us on the trip, Elsa and I were the only women out of probably at least 20 people in that room. All the women were in the other room in the house where the cooking was being done. And that I could really feel the significance of me being there. You know, I have tattoos on my arms. I played the guitar for them at one point. I, you know, spoke at lunch. I participated in the conversation with this table of men, and I could sense that this was very different and not something that they were used to seeing. So the second part of the day, we were in the kitchen area and the women made cacao and they roasted the beans on the comal, the clay comal, over the fire, and we all shelled the beans together, and then they made cacao paste with the matate, which, oh my god, it was so incredible to see this woman's strength, and she's so adept at using this stone grinding tool. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen, and that's where that tool is where they make, you know, the masa for their tortillas and the cacao paste, and I mean, so much stuff, and everything is made from hand. So they made cacao paste using fresh, you know, herbs from the land, like achiote and allspice and what else? Probably cardamom. And then we shared our cacao with them. So this is our Guatemalan cacao that we make from this community specifically. And on the bag, we have the source, so we say it's made from Ademayac, and we showed it to Gerardo and the other farmers, and it was really beautiful to see their faces light up, and they felt really seen and acknowledged, and you know, they're on this official packaging, and it was just such a special moment. And then we made our cacao for them, and we all shared it together, and it was just magical. It was so magical. And it was like these cultures meeting, you know, like they drink cacao very differently. They don't ferment the beans typically. So they wash the cacao beans and they make a drink that also has sugar in it. That's definitely an impact of colonization. Sugar is quite a phenomenon, not a phenomenon. Sugar is used a lot in the culture, the regions that we were in. And so it's a totally different experience. And our cacao was very different to them. They were like, you know, you don't put sugar in it. And ours is a little thicker because we used fermented beans and it's made in a different process. So it was really cool to be able to share cacao and learn from each other in this beautiful environment. So that was probably my overall trip highlight, honestly, was to be able to connect with these people that do so much and to really see where the cacao that I love comes from and to feel the love and care that this community has. Everything from the way that they run their leadership in a council style to the way they live so close to the earth and the river that is their home, you know, it is just beyond. Okay, so there's so much more I could say about this trip. That was not the only two things that we did, but those felt like the most significant things to share so far. And I wanted to share some takeaways that I had. So overall, my first biggest takeaway is make it a routine to get out of your routine. I came home feeling nourished, feeling strong. I'd gotten back into my yoga practice. I practiced yoga every single day on that trip with Jonas, and I haven't been in a really solid yoga practice for a long time, and I feel so many beneficial effects from that. And I just also am reflecting on, you know, there are ways to take small breaks throughout life. And it's I want to restructure my idea of taking vacation. It's like I can take a half day in the middle of the week and go on a hike. You know, how can I create these moments of retreat, of reset within my life so that I am consistently nourishing and pausing and giving myself space to fill my cup? How can I maybe dedicate a weekend each month to some sort of maybe hot springs or some sort of camping or any way to reset myself and kind of get out of the matrix for a little bit? And then how can I be really diligent about looking at flights, like find a cheap flight and take a week off, not a week off, but since I can work remotely, like I can do that. And it really expanded my sense of what's possible and also reminded me that this is really important. Like having these times out of my daily grind are where I feel most creative, most inspired, most clear, and that will directly feed and nourish the work that I do in the world. So make it a routine to get out of your routine. Yoga and cacao every damn day. That was huge. Like I just spoke about yoga and cacao was really special, especially as we were traveling through cacao farms to just commune with cacao. And one small practice we were doing a lot was cacao microdosing. So taking maybe 3 discs of cacao in some water in the morning and then maybe have a second dose in the afternoon of 4 discs. So how, you know, just different ways to relate to cacao was really cool to experience. Always try to speak the language when you travel. I was grateful to be somewhat proficient in Spanish where I was able to communicate a lot. And, you know, we wrote down Quechua Maya words and tried to speak them as much as possible. You know, obviously we didn't understand all of any of it, but just I feel like there's such a, that shows respect and awareness. And I also saw, you know, when we went to Antigua, which is a much larger city, I saw the kind of hostile backpacker vibe, which is often not, a lot of people aren't even trying to speak the language of the countries that they're traveling in. And I really feel like that is the least we could do as people that have privilege and access to visit these countries, to go on these trips. Speak the language, try and speak the language. You don't have to be fluent, but even just saying, hello, how are you? Or saying, I don't understand Spanish in the language is going to go so far and show a lot of respect and awareness for where you are in the world. And I think, and that also, you know, that builds deeper connections and builds, you get to relate with people in different cultures in much deeper ways when there's an exchange versus you just going to someone's country and kind of like experiencing the cool things and then leaving. It's like there's so much depth available to us. Always bring stomach stuff while traveling is another takeaway. So I mentioned I got sick, and then my Elsa, my dear friend, got super sick and still on a healing journey from it. And especially in Guatemala, man, the bacteria is real. Not saying that Guatemala is like dirtier than any other country, but the difference in the gut flora and the difference in the bacteria that I had before going there, it was a big contrast. And so it was a lot for my body, and it's a lot for a lot of people's bodies to take in, often the first trip or two that you're traveling down there. So I'm so grateful we had activated charcoal, we had oregano oil, we had grapeseed oil extract, we had probiotics, just definitely bring holistic, natural healing support, because the worst thing would be to get stuck in that situation and then not have any of that around and have to go to the hospital and take antibiotics, which is just going to totally crush your whole gut system, and that will take a long time to heal from. So that was a takeaway. Always bring stomach stuff while traveling. Permaculture is the way to the new earth. I am so excited. I found a program on at Occidental Arts and Ecology Center in Sonoma County, California, that a lot of people recommended, and I'm going to take it in the summer. And I would love to geek out about permaculture or learn more about it. If you're into it, feel free to hit me up on Instagram at Sina_Maria, or email me at love@sinamaria.com. Or if you have questions about permaculture, I'm a total noob. I don't know much about the actual, you know, system of it. But as far as, like, if you're thinking about doing it and have, you know, are going back and forth on it or want to talk to someone about it, I'm so happy to chat about it, because I feel very clear that it's a really potent and important way that we can bring in the new earth. And for those that are feeling called or interested in it, I feel like the more people that have this knowledge, the better. And the last takeaway is that the earth speaks to us. There were so many moments where a lizard would wake me up at the perfect time by making the little call that they make. Or I had this beautiful experience as I was watching the sunset on the island of this frigate bird dropping a feather right over my head, and it fell down. I watched it fall down into the ocean, and I swam out to get it. And I was sitting there contemplating a few different things that I was just kind of mulling over in my head while I was watching the sunset. And that symbol of the feather just being dropped right over me was really powerful for me. And I throughout the trip had many different experiences of realizing that the earth is talking to us all the time. We just need to listen, and that requires moments of stillness and quiet and contemplation. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that recap. If you have any questions or comments, I would so love to hear them. If you haven't already left a review on iTunes, I so appreciate, I think we have about 20 reviews on right now, and I so appreciate everyone that's taken the time to do that. And I came back from the trip with a very renewed and excited plan and vision for where this podcast is going to go next. So please show some love if you're finding this valuable in any way. I love to hear the feedback and want to get this out in front of more people. Check out ceremonialcacao.com, ceremonial-cacao.com, or Google Firefly Chocolate, or at Cacao Ceremony on Instagram. The work that we're doing is really special, and there's going to be a lot of cacao information that we're sharing about our trip and beyond coming this year. So go give them a follow. And if you want to join the webinar series of your new earth purpose, medicineofbeinghuman.com/offerings, and you can sign up for that. Okay, lots of love, family. I hope you are swimming in these Piscean waters with a lot of ease and grace and compassion for yourself. And step by step, we're doing it.